Broadcasting from Lockport, New York, it's time for The Dads Must Be Crazy. Just three guys raising kids and currently hiding from them in an undisclosed tool shed to talk about parenting, pop culture, and penguins. Or something else that starts with a P. It's Craig, the stay-at-home dad historian and hockey enthusiast. Howie, the stay-at-home dad who used to be a reporter when journalism was a thing. And Bobby, the retired Army vet, Trekkie, and gamer, helping to raise three kids in beautiful Western New York. Now, here's the dads.
Welcome to the Dads Must Be Crazy. I am Craig, joined by my partners in crime, Howie.
Hello.
And Bobby.
Howdy.
Big news for you, Howie, this week. You're going back to school. It's big excitement. Exciting.
Well, that's not big news.
Bigly.
Big news for me. I had a good week. Got my grades for the summer classes that hadn't been posted yet. Of the four classes I took, one had been posted back in July. It was an A. The other three courses got posted. They were also A's. I was very happy with myself.
So what have you had? All A's since you began?
12 credits worth of A's.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's 12 credits in 10 weeks. Two classes per 5 weeks. And it was a very intense workload the second session because it was a lot of writing and reading and very not easy reading because it was all philosophy-based.
Yeah, I know. I heard a lot of saw a lot of it as you typed in our chat.
Yes, I vented more about that kind of reading than any time in the past several weeks. I took one philosophy course in Syracuse as an undergrad. It was a course everybody was
still sucks.
It was one of those things everybody's on campus like, oh, you got to take this course. You got to take this course. It's the professor is great. It's an easy A. You got to take this course. I'm thinking to myself, all right, I got some time on my schedule this semester. I don't remember what semester I enrolled in it. I went to class. I think it met like on a Tuesday and a Thursday. I went to the first week's worth of classes. I'm like, okay, this is interesting. Then I went to the second week's worth of classes. I'm like, this is not interesting anymore. I have better things to do with my time. And I understand why people enjoyed it. I just didn't. So I dropped it.
Well, the thing with philosophy is nobody's right and nobody's wrong.
That's the part that drives me insane. There's got to be a winner and a loser.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I mean, at one point, one of the assignments, and I'm not going to get too detailed, but the detail I'll give is that I'm enrolled in a professional teaching certification program at Buff State, and I'm taking courses to get certified as a teacher. Anyway, one of the courses that I just finished, I needed to give my individual philosophy on something. And when I wrote it up, I sent it to the professor who sent back critiques of it because it was one of those like types of things that he would say, I'll let you know how you're doing. I said, okay, cool. And he sent back a critique on it saying, well, you did this wrong. You did this wrong. He wasn't mean about it. I don't want to give that impression. But for the purpose of this conversation, what he was saying was, your opinion is, where is it? I apparently told a story the very wrong way.
Imagine that.
Yeah. He requested that I tighten up what I was trying to say.
He said, quit taking the long way around.
Right. So he said, follow the bullet points and you'll be fine. So I did that. I wrote a second draft. He said, try it again. And a third draft, I did it again. And he's like, there you go. Okay, cool. It's one of those things where it's, is it your best? Is it your best? And when I finally said, is this what you want? I think I got it this time. He's like, yep, way to go. I'm like, okay. And I don't mind that. I don't mind that. Professors like that who get the best out of you are good people. You may not like them at the time, but they're good people.
I took a series of classes when I went to college. One of them was an anthropology class where the professor handed out a class schedule that he followed religiously. These are the days you're going to be doing this. These are the days of the test. And he said, if you don't come to this class, you will not pass this course at all. And I said, challenge accepted. So I only went for the tests and the final exam, and I finished with a 4.0 in it. So,
don't you threaten me with a good time. I would have told your professor, Howie, like, is there a wrong way to eat a Reese's?
That's what I tried to do.
I mean,
but I kept the lines of communications open with this guy. Bobby and I are the only two people at this table who are currently enrolled in any school at all. So I will say this. At our age, going back to school in any way, shape, or form, and I think you've realized this.
It's got
to
be a little bit intimidating.
And we'll continue to realize this. It's not intimidating. It's an entirely different mindset because the first session, the most fun I've had this summer was in one of the classes I took in the first session. It was all about how technology is integrated into education now. I kind of like was a ringleader of sorts, I guess, because I was helping to develop this one type of lesson type of thing. And I created a Google Hangout where I was talking with some of the other classmates. I was like, anybody else doing anything else for this summer? What do you think of this? What do you think of this? And when somebody said, well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, this one's a lot of work. I was thinking to myself, how is this a lot of work? This is actually really, really fun.
I just finished my bachelor's last year.
Right,
in November. And I'm going back to school for my master's now. Like, I'm currently enrolled. Same university. It's online program, mm-hmm. cohort, all that stuff. Setup is the exact same. The only difference is instead of having one discussion and one paper a week, now I have three discussion questions and one paper a week. So the discussions, instead of being broad, because my last degree, my bachelor's of science is psychology, so now I'm going back for my master's of science in child, youth, and family studies because I work in that field. So the focus is more narrowed. The beginning book, it's talking about cognitive development of children in kindergarten through second grade. So like, I guess, 6 to 8 year olds, roughly.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I just covered that my last degree.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, like, because at first I was like, man, this is a lot, and I'm not really sure how I'm going to juggle all this between family, karate, because I spend so much time in the dojo. I work part-time right now as, you know, a youth care worker for youth with special needs, and then a full-time course load. I'm like, oh my God. Like, I'm sitting here going, you know, I'm starting to tweak, and then I'm like, I got in, I did the agreement, I did my introduction, I did my replies today for my introductions, and then I was looking at the assignments, and I was like, they're really not that bad. It's like 3 to 4 paragraphs per discussion, and then I have to do at least 4 replies. So that's a total of 3 posts, 12 replies, but then I got to reply to people who reply to my post. So you could be upwards of 16 posts, but I mean, you're no longer an undergraduate, you're getting a graduate degree. So obviously they're going to want you to be more in depth, but in a more narrower mindset.
Yeah.
And so I was like, this might be fun.
That's the way I looked at it. I mean, I took a 300 level class and a 500 level class in the first summer session. And you know, I spoke to the advisor person, and she was like, the two courses you're taking are a good way to jump back into it after a while. I said, okay, cool. And the one course, like I said, was really a lot of fun. My daughter actually helped me to create a Bitmoji character of myself as part of the class. The other course was very, read these chapters, take the quiz at the end of each chapter, take the test at the end of each week, and make sure you answer these questions as necessary, and then write a paper at the end of it. Well, one of the papers, the final paper, was an interview assignment. And as I've mentioned many times here on this podcast, my previous career was as a journalist. So interviewing people was journalism 101. So I thought outside the box, very outside the box, actually, and was thinking, oh, I'm going to do this, I'm going to create this. And the paper only needed to be like 5 or 6 pages long.
It's not terrible.
When it was all said and done, I think I'd written 14 pages when you include the interview recaps, because I did 2 separate interviews. The extra appendixes on the back of the paper, which was, I was laughing to myself. It has to be 12-point font, double-spaced. And I can remember setting my default style on like Microsoft Word in college at 10-point, double-spaced. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm not going to make it. It's got to be 4 pages, and it's only 2.5. And then I would change it to 12-point and be like 5. I'm like, oh, this is great. And if I'm starting at 12, it was difficult to write it. But it was not difficult to write it. It was more time-consuming than difficult, I guess, is what I should say.
Yeah, I think it's going to flow, you know.
Exactly.
Like, the thing is, we'll find a groove, and it's like, what priorities do we have to rearrange for this? Because ultimately, that's the topic for this week, is priorities.
This is a great segue.
Like I mentioned earlier, between karate, family, working part-time, and then full-time student, how am I going to juggle this? And because my schedule is not set, my work schedule, like my time in the dojo is already set, but it's my work schedule that is that outlier, you know, that's just kind of hanging around out there. Okay, well, you're going to work Sunday, Monday, and Friday of this week, but then next week I may work a Tuesday, a Wednesday, and then a Saturday. And so I kind of need to know my schedule in advance. So am I really going to have to give up a night in the dojo because I don't want to?
Let me ask this, and Craig, we're monopolizing the conversation here, but you chime in on this too, because let me know if you think I'm on the right track here. Bobby and I have gone back to school. He's got his courses this fall. I'm taking six because I'm taking a combination of undergrad and graduate ones, and a lot of them are virtual.
And you're psychotic.
I actually bought one of the texts to start reading already. Is it crazy for me to consider what Bobby is doing and what I am doing in terms of going back to school and having to rearrange our lives around our families and the priorities that our families have? Is it crazy to think of that as not the same, but in the same realm of adding a kid? Because you don't know what you did with the time before then. And then when you have a kid, you go, oh my God, I don't have time. You know what I'm saying?
I'm the wrong person to ask about that, obviously, from the anecdote I told you about my college days.
Look, this is a dad's podcast, right? So when each of us respectively became fathers for the first time, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but having a kid, and Craig, in your case, having two at once, I'm sure it was even double the fun.
Didn't know any better, so.
Right.
When we had one later, I'm like, holy cow, this is easy.
Right, but yeah. The point I'm getting at is when you when you become a dad for the first time, when you become a parent for the first time, you start to wonder what people without kids are doing with their time. And you wonder what you did with that time as well, because you no longer have it. Do you understand what I'm trying to say?
I get what you're saying, because if I didn't have kids, like, I don't know what I would do with my time. Like, I don't, it, like, if I didn't have karate, if, like, how would I fill my time up? I have no idea. What would you do?
I'd probably be in jail.
At least you're honest.
I don't have to worry about this. All right, here we go.
I think my house would be a lot cleaner. But
you wouldn't have that big of a house, though, if you didn't have kids. You wouldn't need it.
I might actually have the same house. It would just be a lot cleaner. My wife has always wanted to have a house in the location where we are. So,
see, that would not be me. The materialistic side of me is not that strong.
Yeah, my house wouldn't be that big. As big as mine is now. Like, it would be smaller if it was
just my wife. We bought this house specifically because we knew that we wanted kids. If we didn't want kids, we would have gotten a far smaller house.
Let's put it this way. I don't know what house I would be living in, but all I'm saying is whatever house I'd be in without kids, it would be clean.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's all I know.
My refrigerator door wouldn't get open and shut 50 times a day.
We have an alarm on ours in case the door is open. It bings all the time.
Yeah.
If it doesn't get shut, bing, bing, bing. Like, someone didn't close the refrigerator door because it's trying to back up.
Oh, my God. What'd you do? I put the refrigerator in reverse.
Great. Now we're going to have all this cooked food. It's supposed to say cool.
My goodness.
Hey, it's a dad's joke on a dad's cast. Why not?
The question I have for you before we keep going on this, you're taking six classes this fall semester. What classes are you going to be taking, if you can tell us?
I can tell you a couple of them. The two that I'm most looking forward to, because I might be able to dovetail some of them into some content for our website.
Okay.
Is one of them is ethnic and minority literature, and the other one is young adult literature.
I love both.
Right. So I've got the first book that we're reading for the ethnic and minority one is called America's in the Heart. It's about a Filipino-American immigrant. The young adult literature, the professor likes to, because I emailed her and I said, any chance I can get the reading list ahead of time? She said, basically, I would give it to you, but I like having my students essentially vote on what books we read each
Ooh,
time.
Ooh, I like that
I'm
idea.
I love that idea, because if I'm not into the book, or if I don't want to read the book, I find reading the book to be difficult.
I can't stand it when teachers and professors stick the old classics in there just because they've always taught it.
And we discussed this, I think, either on this campus.
Yeah, we did.
But like, you know, why not take a classic with a contemporary one?
Compare the two of them.
Read a section from this, a section from this, and tell me, you know, how did we get from this to this? I love that idea, and as I get further into this training thing, I want to find out a way to create a lesson out of that.
And now we've locked Bobby out. He's trying to talk twice, and we've talked over him.
I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it's fine. I was just going to say, like, you said you had something with a class that talks about culture, or...
I finished taking a multicultural philosophy course this past one of the sessions, yeah.
Yeah, I've got... There's two courses I'm actually really looking forward to in my course of study, and one is called Families Across the Lifespan, which I think will be interesting, and then there's another one called Children, Youth, and Families in Cultural Context, and I think that's, you know, very relevant to what I do. If I could even talk about it, it would be great, but there was something that happened and I was like, okay, and it got handled the way it needed to handle. But would I have been the right person to handle that based on the cultural differences was what I asked myself. Now, taking one course is not going to make me a cultural expert by any stretch of the means.
I agree with you, yeah.
But it will give me some insight, you know, and I think the individual that managed the situation with the youth did so in a very straightforward, caring, and clear and concise manner, because obviously you want to be very clear and very concise when you're dealing with youth, like the type of youth that I work with, and I thought it was fantastic. So I'm really looking forward to some of these courses, but that I won't get to those until next year.
I know that the two I mentioned are both, technically speaking, they're undergrad. I'm looking forward to those because of the reading that's involved. There's another one that's talking about the teaching of writing. There's another one that's talking about, there's another one where I'm supposed to be going to school districts around the area as like field experience in English education. Not quite sure how that one's going to work right now because of all of the all of the varied reopening plans. So that one's still kind of up in the air. Not quite sure what's going to happen with that. There is, I know at some point next spring, I'm taking a course on being able to teach Shakespeare to students. I know Craig's opinion of Shakespeare, but when I get to Shakespeare, when the time comes and I got to teach some version of Shakespeare to my future students, you can rest assured that there will be a lesson that involves some sort of introduction of gargoyles, which became Shakespearean.
I was going to say a Captain Picard reference.
There you go. That would be fantastic.
I might just put up a video of Jean-Luc Picard as Patrick Stewart. Yes, I said it that way. Reading Shakespearean sonnets. Or I'll put up Christopher Plummer against William Shatner in Star Trek VI as, you know, you've never heard Hamlet until you've heard it in the original Klingon. You know, Takba, Takbe, you know. There you go. Shakespeare itself, I remember it in high school, and I remember not liking it.
It's brutal. The language is beautiful if you actually get a chance to listen to the cadence of it. The problem is, when I was being taught Shakespeare, the cadence was secondary or even tertiary to listen to what this instructor says and what does it mean. But the primary thing should be listen to the cadence and listen to the beauty of the language and then pull from that the symbolism. I probably would have liked it a lot better that way.
Between now and 18 to 24 months from now, God willing, I'm hired somewhere. And when the time comes to teach Shakespeare, my goal is going to be to liven it up. Because I know everybody's going to be like, oh, Shakespeare. I'm like, no, Shakespeare. Think about it. The guy doesn't last this long unless he had something to say.
Well, and then I remember going to high school and reading The Great Gatsby. And we would talk over and over and over about what the meaning of the story was. Basically, and I learned this on my own, and when I actually said this in the classroom, I had a blank stare from everybody in the classroom, like they couldn't believe I said it. I go, this story comes down to old money and new money are different and can never mix.
Yeah.
And that was that one sentence was the whole story.
Yeah.
But we spent weeks trying to interpret what the story meant, and when I said it in one sentence, I was like, they were like, you little son of a gun.
You're too smart for your own good.
No, there's certain things. We were talking about like priorities and what do you do, right? What do we do at the time?
Yeah.
Going back to that, I mean, along with the full-time class schedule, as long as I am continuing to keep my health in order, I'll be subbing probably upwards of 3 days a week. So between that and school and all the household responsibilities I have, which we've established on this thing many times before, you know, I'm going to set aside some time on certain days where I'm going to be like, all right, I'm doing classwork. Let me be. And I believe, at least I would like, I have to believe, because if I don't, then I'm out of luck. Taking six courses that start August 31st and essentially end right around Thanksgiving, they're going to be spaced out enough to the point where I can handle that. Because the courses I was taking over the summer were so condensed, by the end of week two, they're like, oh, yeah, we're going to basically be handling stuff now that we would have been handling near the end of October. Because it's such a condensed version of each
class. Well, you're going every day compared to every other day or twice a week.
I was going online like every day trying to write something. I mean, the courses I just finished the last session, which were, like I said, very philosophical, I wound up writing multiple 7 to 10 page papers each week.
Well, I mean, I was gonna ask you, Craig, like with the bacon bits going back and doing the hybrid program, and you're back being a historian again.
Yay, much rejoice. Lots of rejoicing.
There was much rejoicing. And then, obviously, your lovely bride is going to be back teaching, whether it's the hybrid model or brick and mortar.
It's going to be hybrid, but I think they're going in 5 days a week.
But how does that cause you to rearrange and reprioritize stuff? Because the kids are going to be at school one day, and then the next day they're going to be home, and then the next day, and then...
I asked Wendy to go and buy a second calendar. What we do is we have a calendar on the door that we put up our appointments for each day or whatever's happening during that week, and then we put dinner plans so everybody knows right from the beginning of the day what's for dinner that night. It's not, what are we having for dinner 50 times a day? And we also know when I look at it, oh, I need to get chicken out of the freezer, or I need to get the sauce started before I go to work, that type of stuff. I had her get a second calendar because they're going every other day, so they'll go 3 days 1 week and 2 days the next.
Yep.
And all the B's are on the same team, school district-wide. So they'll all be going on the same day.
Yeah, your kids and my kids will be going to the school the same day.
But to make sure that I know what days they have to be at school, I have to have a calendar. That's for me, for my own sanity. Plus, on the days that they're doing virtual, they're going to have to log in and check in attendance-wise with their classes first thing in the morning. So it's not like... You can log in at noon. You're already behind by half the day at that point.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm pretty sure Medina's doing something, if not the same, extraordinarily similar to that.
So I got to make sure I know who's got to be on what, where, when, plus when are they going to be at school. And then once they get their class schedules, because they have gym and they have art and they have band, which they're all going to do all those things, you got to make sure that they have their instruments, their different clothes. You're not going to wear a special dress on the day they have art class. So I have to make sure that, you know, there's a lot going into what's going on. I am not, by any stretch of the imagination, an organized person. I abhor organization. Because if your desk is already clean, everything's in order, that means all the thinking has already been done.
It means there's nothing to do.
No, and not for me. Like, I have to keep mine
cluttered. That's your military thing.
Well... For me, it's clutter-free, so then I'm free to put my thoughts down, and then I can organize my stuff and then cross-reference. So I just go about it a different way. So I'm just saying that for me, it doesn't mean the thinking's done. I just have a clean workspace where I can actually do my thinking.
What I need is an actual office in the house that has a big desk and a bulletin board above the desk. It's no heat out there, and how cold it is in the winter.
Get a space heater.
No, too many houses I know have burned down because of that.
Turn it off when you leave the room.
Dude, I have an electric fireplace for the basement.
So
it's fantastic.
That's Wendy's crafting room besides. So I have a room upstairs.
I've been here many times. I've never seen her
crafting
anymore. In that room.
I don't care what anybody says. I still have a room upstairs. I know you've heard the stories, but guess what? My final say.
You know how I know the room I use is my office will never really be overtaken by anybody?
Because it's laundry in there, too.
It's the laundry room. The computer is in there. And my kids, if they really need to print anything out or whatever, they can go in there. My wife can't do. But the laundry room is in there. No one else goes in there.
If I can get my parents to get internet for the wintertime, I have an office.
You could get your parents to get internet anyway, and then you can actually leave the house to go to your office.
Exactly.
That would work.
Yeah. Like, for me, my office is the...
You have a nice office.
Well, it's the finished basement.
Right.
Downstairs. I mean, it's okay. It needs some more work, but it's definitely...
It's very nice.
It's good.
It's very nice.
Yeah. I'm not complaining by any stretch of the means. I mean, it's, 600 square feet of my basement has been finished, so it's drywalled and hanging ceiling and lights and all that, and I put a electric fireplace down there. So I turn it on when I go down. Before I go upstairs, I turn it back off, because other than that, it's like 60 degrees down there. Like, you'll be frozen by the time you...
I lived in my parents' basement. I loved it when it was cooler.
I've got, down in my basement, I've got a futon that's been with me since I was living on my own the 1 year that I graduated and my wife was still...
And you have a huge basement.
It's a large basement that is extraordinarily open, but all of the open area is finished. So I've got...
I've seen pictures. I haven't actually been down there.
I got to clean it up because it's getting cluttered again. But that's where I've been working out, because I have a TV with a built-in DVD player down there. I've been working out now for almost 4 months. I feel better. I've redistributed some weight. I haven't lost a freaking pound, but I've redistributed a lot of what was
I lost 10 pounds. And I'm staying steady under the magic number, so we're good.
I had a dad bod thing slowly developing. I said, no, this is not happening. And now if I like poke my belly, it's not Homer Simpson going, woohoo. It's me going, okay, I can live with that. I did one 90-day program. I threw some running in. Today I ran a little bit, and I did 90-day program number two. I'm like, I'm doing okay.
Priorities and dad bod.
It was a couple years ago. My wife and I went to a birthday party for our middle child's friend. And it was in Batavia at the water park thing that they've got near the Target in the hotel. You guys know what I'm talking about.
Yep.
And when we left the party, I looked at my wife and I said, I know I'm out of shape, but oh my God, the amount of dad bods. And she, as soon as I said dad bod, she lost it. She was laughing hysterically. She goes, yeah, some of those guys really shouldn't have taken their shirts off. I'm like, okay.
I don't take my shirt off regardless. There was a time in 2010 where I went P90X, full P90X. I did every exercise, followed the diet to the T, quit drinking soda, drank only water. I mean, I followed the diet right to everything. And I went from like 190 to 156, and I was ripped. And I still would not take my shirt off.
I
don't like it. I don't like, you know, people don't see my nakedness.
Hey, I did. This summer, at one point, after about 2 months working out, I'm like, cool. I don't got a gut anymore. I'm going to go spread mulch with no shirt on. And I did. I got a nice tan. I also got a nice sunburn for a little while, but I was okay with that. I'm like, all right. I didn't care.
My wife says that the chiseled body is fun to look at, but it's no fun to cuddle with. Dad bods are good to cuddle with, she
says.
I'm
not looking to get chiseled. I'm looking to not have a spare tire in my belly.
Speaking of dad bods, since we've shifted the topic here a little bit, they actually did a study, actually, and Wendy, your lovely bride, is absolutely correct.
Oh, yeah.
Women are like, yeah, they're great to look at, but when it comes to snuggling, she's like, they're too hard.
There's that problem, too.
There is. But then...
My God.
Yeah. But then you take a guy with a dad bod, and he's out, and he's about with his dad bod. He's got confidence in himself. He's like, whatever, I'm doing my thing. Don't care what you think. Versus the one guy who's, you know, spends most of his time in the gym, he's probably got a nice case of body dysmorphia going on. Plus, he's going to want to spend more time in the gym with the dude bros than he is with you. So get you a man with dad bod.
I can't believe I'm about to reference this movie. Have you guys seen Grown Ups 2?
No.
No, I saw the
first. I was going to tell you about a meme that was about movies. I thought that's where you were going to.
No.
There's a meme that said, Magic Mike grossed $187 million, so yes, women like dad bods. And someone responded with, yeah, but Shrek grossed $474 million, so there goes your theory.
The first Grown Ups was funny. Adam Sandler gets a bad rap. I enjoyed Grown Ups for what it was. It was five actors having a good time together.
Absolutely.
Grown Ups 2 was more of the same.
Yeah.
And there's a scene in that one where all the ladies go to a water park and they're trying to get one of the lifeguards who was like, what you're saying, he's one of the dude bros who spends all of his time in the gym. He walks over. I can't even approximate what his voice sounds like, but it's ridiculous. And they start laughing.
He's got one of those high-pitched voices.
Oh, God, yeah. And the line from the ladies, I think it was Maya Rudolph, goes, every part of him was on steroids except his voice.
That's an actual a symptom of steroid abuse.
Yeah, it was funny. But
don't get me wrong. We're not knocking guys who spend a lot of time in the gym.
No,
you know, being physically fit. That's their thing. That's what they're into. That's awesome. But dad bods are where it's at the end of the day. Not saying
let's
that.
Let's put it this way: if you have a dad bod, it means that chances are you're a dad.
I would think that I would like to trade my 47-year-old dad bod for my 30-year-old dad bod.
I would like to take and trade mine in for my 34-year-old dad bod.
I don't have a. I don't know.
You just left your 30s, so.
I did. I just left my 30s, so.
My brother had his birthday yesterday. It's his last birthday in the 30s.
Mm. Oh, goodness. I don't know. Dad bods, priorities. I mean, working out, like, that's a priority for me. Like, I have to work out first thing in the morning, period.
I need to make that one of my priorities.
If I don't get, well, the thing about working out in the morning is, one, your testosterone level is as high as it's going to be in the morning. So that's why I work out in the morning, because I have more testosterone readily available at that point. Plus, it energizes me and it gets my day going. It sets the tone for the day for me, like mentally, because I'm like, I accomplished something. I worked out. I feel good. And then I go take all my vitamins and my fish oil and all that stuff because, you know, I got to put some oil on the joints and stuff every now and then. It's what happens when you're in your 40s. You know, you got to grease the wheels there a little bit, you know. So But the good thing is, though, is, you know, because I prioritized it and I've eaten, you know, I eat healthy and I've cut out alcohol and I drink mostly water and I take a multivitamin and, you know, all that other stuff. I don't longer snap, crackle, pop when I get out of bed. That's just great.
That is the biggest advantage I noticed. I mean, 4 years ago, I tried doing the program I just finished. And I did it for 60 days. Went to Toronto with my dad, my brother.
And then you fell off the wagon.
I came home. The next exercise or the next workout to do was all deadlift stuff. I pulled a muscle in my back. I tried working out again 2 weeks later, and it still hurt. And then I picked up the program again this year. It was 4 years later. So I did all 90 days. I threw some running in. And about 2.5 months into it, I realized, you know what? I can go to sleep and I'm not achy. I can get up and I'm not achy. This is good. You know, I'm enjoying the fact that I'm not looking to get ripped. I'm looking to get in better shape.
Yep.
I'm looking to make sure that the amount of medication I take for my high cholesterol doesn't need to increase anytime soon.
Yeah.
Because I'm in better shape. I want to be able to eat a pint of Ben and Jerry's and know that I've earned it.
Damn you, I'm not allowed to eat ice cream anymore.
See, here's the thing, though. You know how you keep from falling off the wagon? Like, I just ate a pint of ice cream, like, last weekend, and it was fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
And it was Häagen-Dazs buttered pecan, because I love buttered pecan. My kids asked me if I had instantly turned old, because normally see old people eating it. But anyway, what you do is you give yourself a cheat day, is what you do. So I eat healthy, like, 6 days out of the week. You know, chicken, fish, turkey, a little bit of red meat, lots of vegetables, some fruit, lots and lots of water. But then on my cheat day, I get to go nuts. Ice cream, pizza, barbecue, like all the stuff that's bad for you. You just get to eat.
Our buddy Rich does that. He does the keto diet, and he has 1 day a week that he cheats, and he just splurges on everything.
Now, I don't go overboard with everything. Like, I'll have 2 pieces of pizza, and I'll eat a little bit of ice cream. You know,
damn you and the ice cream, both of you.
Peanut butter M&M's, take your pick. I might get a few tacos from Taco Bell, but I don't go to the point where I'm like, oh my God, I got to undo my pants, you know, my top button on my pants. But I do throw the trash in my system because it lets my body know it's like, crap, now I got to flush all this out. So you get a nice purge, but and then you go back to eating healthy.
It kind of gives you that impetus to keep working hard too because you feel crappy after eating that stuff.
Well, I alternate my cheat days. So 1 week will be a Saturday, the next one will be a Sunday, and then I might keep it a Sunday and then go back to a Saturday. But I always try to mix it up so my body doesn't find a rhythm.
I've talked a few minutes already on this cast about the two classes that I just finished, and the last 2 weeks of these classes were so... I had so much writing to do that I essentially wound up not working out for essentially 3 weeks. So when I... My family and I went down to Watkins Glen last weekend, which I think was part of the reason that we skipped a
yep.
cast.
And then somebody had a very big event that he could not miss because last week was his wife's birthday.
Yeah.
On a day we would have recorded.
That's a priority as well.
You don't miss that. She was already upset you had to work that day.
Yeah. So it was a priority that I was there in the evening time.
Right. But the point I'm getting at is we're talking about, you know, working out and making priorities. I mean, when we were down on Watkins Glen, I ate so much food. And I didn't plan on eating so much food. And like I said, it had been about 2.5-3 weeks since I'd worked out. And as I'm sitting there, I'm looking down at my belly. I'm like, yeah, I worked out for 90 days and I made progress. And it feels like all of it has gone away in about 10 days. What the heck happened?
Yep.
So I knew as soon as I got home that I would start everything up again this past Monday. And I did. So
you have more gumption than I do because I have the greatest of intentions to start working out, but then I find out that there's things that I need to do that are priorities. I want to finish my book. So 30 pages in about 3.5 days, which is a huge amount of pages. Some of you may not think so.
No, but that is.
When you're writing nonfiction, you have to go back and forth to your references. It's a lot of writing. And, you know, then something may have happened in the world, so I better check the internet. And
oh my God!
In every 5 minutes,
the internet is wrong. I have to correct the internet.
Okay, that only happened every day.
That's another great meme, honey. Come to bed. I can't. There's something wrong on the internet.
Yeah, you know, but that's the thing with everybody's priorities. Like, you both are writers. I'm not. I only write for school papers. Like, that's it. So, like, in your everyday life, you're going to make time to write.
I write at least one page every day.
I'm not. Like, I love physical fitness. It took me a while, but I finally realized, you know, several years ago, it's the only body I get, you know, and I've got a lot of wear and tear.
Or Ted
it.
Williams.
Or Cher.
oh my God.
But, you know, it's the only one I get. And I've got a lot of wear and tear on it from 20 years in the Army. And so I got to take care of what I got left. And so I work out. I eat healthy. Like, those things are priorities for me. Mm-hmm. You know, so I do that. It's the first thing I do Monday through Friday.
I don't want to get into a new topic here, but this kind of goes along with it.
Pop culture.
Nope, not pop culture.
Sports. Rangers have the number one pick. Sorry,
nope, not
sports. I had to get it in sooner or later. Okay.
Whatever. Sports. Growing up, my priorities were reading and writing. I wanted to be an author. And an author said in an interview that I saw on 60 Minutes that the more you read, the better an author you will be. So I took that to heart. I read everything. My dad did not understand that. He is not a person who will sit down and read anything. He's a go out and he will physically labor to get something done. And he used to tell me, because I would be reading a book, but then I'd have a notebook where I'm writing ideas and stuff down. He goes, where are your priorities? This is my priority. But he didn't understand that because he didn't get that mindset. And so now with my kids, I'm like, why are you doing that? This is what I'm interested in. Okay, I get that. And I understand now where my dad was coming from. Like, why aren't you doing anything?
Yeah.
But I was.
It's like another one of my priorities is martial arts. That's why I train 4 days a week. It's thing, like, I have a goal, I've set it for myself, and I have intermittent goals in between the main goal, and I'm on a mission to make those, to achieve those goals. So
that's another topic. Goals.
I wish that I had stuck with the martial arts I had taken as a kid.
Flung some poo.
No.
Did you say flung some poo?
That is what he said. No.
Krav Maga.
I guarantee you that if I had stuck with the martial arts I had taken as a child through the time right up to the one when we moved away from Virginia Beach, that if I had kept with it, my martial arts would completely stomp over all of your martial arts. Do you want to know why?
Why is that?
Because Howie's awesome.
No.
Was it judo?
No. It was teaching from a, and I kid you not, a Chuck Norris karate studio. So I would have been able to...
He would have had a beard, too, and the beard by itself would have kicked your butt.
There would have been a hidden fist behind the beard.
That's exactly right. I was taking lessons from a Chuck Norris karate studio.
I was going to say Krav Maga. Isn't that the Israeli?
Yeah, Krav Maga is the Israeli special forces martial art. But Chuck Norris is what? Jeet Kune Do.
I don't know what it was. All I know is it was a Chuck Norris karate studio. That's my
Tang Sudo. I think that's his. Tang Sudo.
Jeet Kune Do was Bruce Lee, right?
Yeah, Jeet Kune Do was Bruce Lee. And I think Tang Sudo was Chuck Norris.
I once wore a tuxedo.
Jack. Hole.
Oh my goodness.
Too much fun.
All right. So Craig said goals. Speaking of goals, there's a guy the Rangers are going to pick in the first round. He's going to score a lot of goals.
God. I hope he's not a bust.
I hope so too. I hope he is not a bust. Now, that was one thing you wanted to get a dig in on this pick. You want to mention that before we wrap
I don't have
up
a dig.
Week?
I don't have a dig on the pick. I have a dig on what the NHL did. This phase two, the two phases, I hope they never do it again. I understand why they did it this year.
Let's put it this way. I completely see where you're coming from. But even if they had just taken the teams that were in the playoffs to the playoffs, the Rangers would not have been in the playoffs. So at least it was a lottery team that won the lottery.
Well, what about Pittsburgh? Because Pittsburgh could have won.
But they didn't, so it's a moot point.
Right. But you're having a team that was probably going into the tournament the best team health-wise and talent-wise.
Pittsburgh. Okay.
I have never been a Montreal Canadiens fan, but I was cheering bigly.
I think the NHL and the NBA right now are two leagues that are doing very well.
Except for if you're a Boston goaltender.
Well, in that case...
I applaud him for that, because his priorities were where they needed to be.
It was a family priority, yeah, exactly. So he decided to leave. And boo to the people online and on the air who decided to take pot shots at him. But the bottom line is the NHL and NBA are doing well in their respective bubbles. And I see where you're coming from with the whole phase two of the lottery. I don't think it's ever going to happen again.
It can't happen again. It's an awful, awful thing.
The way they did it, though, was... strictly because this was out of necessity, this whole phase one, phase two thing. They shouldn't have to do it again. And here's hoping we don't have to come to this phase one, phase two thing again.
And here's what I also have to say about what they do in a regular draft year. The bottom two teams in the NHL should have a higher percentage of receiving the number one draft than they do now.
I can get on board with giving them a higher percentage.
It doesn't need to be crazy
high. I can get on board with that because the more I think about it, the more I think that you really can't reward teams for losing, which is in a sense what it does. So I like having the lottery. I don't want to do away with that. I think it works. I think it can be improved upon. I'm not complaining with the results this year or last year for that matter. I'm very excited.
I still think the Rangers should trade number one for 3 and 5. Because then you're getting two impact players because most of the top 10 are going to be impact.
I agree with some of that, but I've looked into who this guy is enough, and I think the whole idea of trading one down to get 3 and 5, it's not going to happen. They're going to take this guy.
Okay.
So.
Though the NHL is weird, it could happen in a parallel universe.
I think the NHL is doing well, but NHL GMs, most of them, not all of them, most of them are stupid.
While we're talking about hockey, I heard somebody before we started the show saying that his team was not doing so well. How are your Stars doing?
They just tied the series up 2-2. They had a late goal at the end of the third period. They had 12 seconds left, so it was 19-48, and they tied it up with 12 seconds to go and then scored the overtime winner at 16 and some change in.
John Klingberg, he got the winner.
So. Only one overtime, not five overtimes that should be cut and made a 3-on-3 with a shootout.
We're not going to discuss that. That's a whole other topic, and that should not happen.
It should not. And I found out that Mike Milbury has a Twitter account. I have not yet been banned from it.
Who the hell is that guy?
Exactly.
Thank you. He tweeted a photo from Toronto
and called it the Space Needle.
Yeah.
Who is this guy?
He look up Mike Milbury's shoe on YouTube, and you'll find out who Mike Milbury is.
Yeah. He's NHL.
He's a former NHL coach who once.
And player.
Yeah, who jumped into the stands chasing a fan with a shoe.
Beat him with his own shoe.
Yeah. And he is now a commentator on NBC Sports for the NHL.
He's awful. He's terrible.
He's bad. And then, of course, there was an injury that happened yesterday, and the homer.
Jack Armstrong. What?
Jack Edwards.
Jack Edwards, yeah.
From Boston went on Twitter and was like, well, this guy fell and hurt his knee, but he deserved it. It's like, are you kidding me? You don't say stuff like that. So, I don't care who you root for.
This guy's terrible.
Terrible, yeah.
Oh, God,
terrible.
Yes. In fact, somebody says something about Milbury, and I said, someone's like, why is Milbury on the air? And I actually tweeted the guy. I'm like, because he's like the Charles Barkley for the NHL. The only difference is Charles says terrible. This guy is terrible. And somebody didn't catch the sarcasm in my tweet. Like,
hey, you leave Sir Charles out of this.
And that's essentially what they're saying. I go, no. I love Charles. He's entertaining as all get out. This guy's just actually terrible.
Right.
I like Charles because he speaks his mind.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Charles Barkley speaks his mind. He's like, he's basketball royalty. I mean, as long as he doesn't go off the deep end, you know, and start saying, you know, oh, that guy deserved it, they're going to leave him alone.
I'm just trying to figure out how a guy like Mike Milbury, who grew up playing hockey, coaching hockey, and now is a commentator for hockey, doesn't understand hockey fans or the game itself.
He's been in it too long to the point where he doesn't understand what the common fan thinks anymore.
So he's been in it so long he's now desensitized to the environment in which he now works.
There needs to be a lot of newer.
He played blood. When they didn't have helmets, so that probably explains a lot.
Oh, maybe he got banged into the goalpost one or two times.
It's entirely possible.
So. Oh, that would hurt like hell.
It happened to Adam Banks, but he rebounded.
Yeah, all the way back down to the other end of the ice. I called him for icing.
Oh, my God.
Oh, okay, so before we get too far off track here, and we're at 48 minutes anyway.
We're already off track.
Yeah, we're way off track.
Yeah, we spent the last 8 minutes having fun.
Exactly.
The first 40 were actually pretty darn good, I think.
I think so.
That's okay. What dads do. We jump around.
Jump around.
I was thinking the same thing, but I was like, not going to do it.
All right, so for Bobby and Howie, I'm Craig. Thank you for listening to The Dads Must Be Crazy. The Dads Must Be Crazy would like to thank Scott Leffler for putting together our awesome intro to the show. And thank you to Amanda Hodge, who helps us with our designs and logos. Intro and outro music provided by Incomtech.com. Our theme music is Retro Future Clean by Kevin McLeod, licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license.